I'm Dr. Wolford. I'm here joined this evening with Sarah Furman, and we are both, as many of you know, part of ADHD Specialists and also part of CHAD. Tonight came to us because both Sarah and myself work extensively with couples and communication, and we tried to poll our listeners or poll different people across the country to find out what are some main issues that lots of people are struggling with. And the theme of tonight's call is miscommunication. It's something that's part of an ADHD world, happens in every relationship, but we have some really interesting and I think very helpful questions that will probably address thoughts that maybe everyone has, and certainly those of us with ADHD. Again, I'm Dr. Wolford. I'm the clinic director at ADHD Specialists, and I'm also on the board for CHAD, which is Children and Adult with Attention Deficit Disorder. And I'm here with Sarah Furman. Like I said, she's a licensed marriage and family therapist and also certified ADHD coach and the co-founder of our center, ADHD Specialists. And I just wanted to say a couple things as far as housekeeping goes. As a reminder to all of our listeners, we are not your primary care physician, and this is no replacement for medical advice. So all the great things you learned tonight, we encourage you to take them back to your psychiatrist or your primary care doctor, whomever they may be, and discuss the options with them, because there's no replacement for one-on-one professional medical care. Okay, now the malpractice insurance company is happy. Maybe we will make one more announcement, and that is to let people that are members of CHAD know that there will be an Ask the Experts meeting coming up. We are very pleased that CHAD is offering a free service called Ask the Experts. It's where all the members of the board, these are medical directors, doctors, psychotherapists, psychologists, coaches, advocates, we'll all be there for all members of CHAD who have any questions that they want to ask or concerns they want to better understand. It'll be Thursday, the 8th of September, and that's at the Tarzana Treatment Center. You can call Dr. Billy Batan to RSVP. If you have a pen and paper handy, I'll give you that number. It's Dr. Billy Batan at 818-919-1971 to RSVP. And one of my most favorite things is coming up, and that's the parent-to-parent classes. They'll be starting on September 15th, and for anyone who has kids with ADHD, it is an amazing experience offered at a fraction of what it would cost you in private practice to get the amount of information and care that you'll get at parent-to-parent. And if you are interested in learning about parenting an ADHD child, you would email Dr. Billy, and her address is Dr. Billy, B-I-L-L-I, that's D-R-B-I-L-L-I, at attentionb.com. All right, that's all of our announcements. So I think we'll go ahead and start.
Great. Shall I start with the first question?
Let's do it.
All righty then. So this was a really big one. We got it in all different ways and simply stated, why do I feel like I just can't trust my partner?
You're right. We hear that. Probably that's if not the first most often asked question, that's certainly the second most often asked question. I think the simple answer is because sometimes you can't, which sounds like a cop-out sometimes, but in many ADHD relationships, broken trust is a factor that, frankly, it just breaks down the relationship because it does happen. Now, Sarah, you were talking earlier about trust being the foundation. Maybe you could say a word about that. I love when you give that analogy.
Well, I'll give it as far as my voice can go tonight.
Okay. I'll pick up where you leave off.
People generally think that it's the big things that break down a relationship, but it's really the little things that are insidious. When you have to patch and rebuild the foundation, because it's the foundations that hold relationships together. And little things just eat away at them like termites eating at wood. After a while, there's so many holes, you just fall through. So trust becomes important, and we build trust by doing the little things because people have in their mind, if you can't do this, how could you do that?
Right.
If I can't trust you to
well,
bring home the milk,
Right.
Make the appointment, take out the trash, or whatever. Then how do I trust you with my heart, my issues, my bigger challenges, with the things that are important to me?
And I hear that even in several sessions this week, people were saying, you know, if I ask you to do something right now, God forbid I should ever get sick, you wouldn't be able to do anything for me. The thought is that if you can't perform on the small things, then it sends the message that when your partner needs something that's not small, you really won't be able to perform. And I think what's scary about that is that very often when that gets brought up in a relationship, the ADHD partner, because they're actually better in crisis than they are on the small things, they say things like, well, it's just this one time today, you know, that I forgot to bring home the milk, so on and so forth. And then the partner very often, the non-ADHD partner, will respond with, wait a minute, you forget things all the time. You know, you forgot this, you forgot that. And the ADHD partner has no idea what they're sort of talking about because they're only focusing on the moment. So the ADHD partner is sort of stuck in the present, thinking it's only about the milk, where the non-ADHD partner is focusing on the entire relationship. So they're really two very different points of view. So I think that the solution here for ways that you can maybe learn to trust your partner is really learn not to sandbag the ADHD partner when these things come up, because it's very easy to say, you know, list 100 times moment by moment, play by play, that they didn't do something. But in fact, that just leads to usually anger and resentment, and it doesn't allow any room to focus on how to solve the problem. So I guess... go ahead, Sue.
Sorry. Let's remember that relationships run on agreements, the way trains run on tracks. And each partner is one side of the track. And the individual ties that connect the rails are the agreements that you make with your partner and your partner makes with you.
So perfectly said.
At this point, I want to add, this is not as easily done as I just said it. And so frequently you want to work with a therapist or a coach who really understands ADD in order to get through. Because usually by the time this is happening, one of both parties is so sensitive or oversensitive because things aren't working and communications aren't helping well, it helps to have that third party. Trust is created by keeping agreements over time. Sometimes each partner believes the agreement is different than it is, and that's why it's important to be clear from both sides as to what the agreement is, what the backup plan will be to that agreement, you know, so that consistency, predictability can happen, because that's what's going to lead to trust.
Right, because the bottom line here is, if you think about it, when you trust someone, you can rely on them. So that's really what we're talking about, is being able to lay these agreements down that you can keep, so that you can build up trust and you can ultimately rely on them. All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Sarah?
I'm just going to make one more point here, and that is trust is really about consistency. And when we trust someone, it's because we have the ability to have some predictability in their behavior. If you teach someone that you're not predictable in your behavior, it's hard for them to trust you because they don't know what's going to happen. And the ADHD partner is feeling, but I am very trustworthy. The non-ADHD partner is feeling, but I don't know what's going to happen. And it creates such anxiety that it sort of rips away at that foundation. Okay, so are we ready for number two?
We're certainly ready. What you got?
What do I do if my partner is always letting me down?
Well, it's a perfect segue from question number one. You know, we do know that if you are in a relationship with someone with ADD or ADHD, there's definitely going to be difficulty in establishing consistency. Because the reality is, every time you let your partner down, it's really an act, like a mini act of betrayal. And I think that very few people think of it as that strong unless you talk to the partner of the ADHD person. And I think they would agree it feels like betrayal. So typically, it's the ADHD loved ones do things differently more kind of every time. So this makes it difficult for people to rely on them or to get something done or understand how or when that might get done. So it's almost as if being too creative on the part of the ADHD partner makes it feel like you never know what's going to happen. And it can really be a fundamental problem in the relationship. Now, I know that Sarah and I talk a lot in our couples classes about commitments and the value of a commitment. And people always get really surprised when I say, you know, keep your word as if your life depended on it. And that's talking about commitments. And the idea there is that it's very important to make commitments and to keep your commitments over and over and over. And by keeping and making, you're really creating a pattern like those railroad ties, kind of, that says that you are someone who can be counted on.
So one of the things that you can do to help your ADHD partner create lots of opportunities so that they can come through for you. A simple one is taking out the trash and then keeping and making that consistently, because it's in doing those things consistently that
it
you're going
it so
to break the
like
cycle of being
trust.
Let down. Yeah.
Yeah, like you have some trust. Now, I know that many times we recommend that couples use a chore chart, just a simple chart that says, you know, Thursday I bring the trash cans in, because I know that I have been accused of one time I went to take the trash cans in, and I did take them in, but I forgot to look inside because, in fact, they hadn't been picked up yet. So this kind of goes back to this idea of being a little too helpful or a little too creative. And so now we use a chore chart at my house. And it just says, you know, Friday is when we take them in, Thursday is when we take them out. And it creates a sense of predictability for both partners. And again, using that trash can as an example, it's really easy for the ADHD partner and the non-ADHD partner, when they've both been sensitized by people not keeping their words, to agree to do something like take the trash cans in or take the trash out. And then when it goes wrong, like when I brought the trash cans in before they were actually picked up and emptied, to think, oh, the ADHD partner is such a failure. Look, this is never going to work. It becomes like an emotional avalanche. And it's really, really important to be able to say, hey, that was one mistake. You know what? Let's do a redo. Let's try it again next week. And things will probably be better. But don't give up after the first try if there's a foible.
It's important to realize that it takes time for people to change. So in the question before, we talked about agreements. So in a separate time when you're setting up what those are going to be, you then have opportunities to continue to make them. It's also important, and I use that word a lot, to realize that breaking your word creates resentment. And resentment destroys intimacy.
Because if intimacy is into me see, who wants to feel like they can let you look inside of them if they don't know what you're going to do when you get there? Isn't that kind of what you're saying, Sarah?
Absolutely.
Because I think the other piece of it is when if you keep your word, you create safety and closeness. When you break your word, you create distance and fear. And uncertainty, sort of what it boils down to.
That's good. You want to repeat that one more time?
Sure.
I'm thinking about all of you out there who are actually taking notes.
Well, I was saying that I think intimacy creates safety and closeness in a relationship. And I think that breaking your word creates a sense of distance, fear, and uncertainty, which are the opposite of intimacy.
So I'm just going to add a caveat to this. For some of you out there thinking about communications, and it's not about you and a partner, but it's about you at work or with coworkers or with friends, this really applies the same way. When you're saying yes, 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 but there's no way for you to meet that schedule or to do what you're doing, you begin to break their trust in you. And when you break your employer's trust or your friend's trust in you, they begin to get queasy inside whenever they have to depend upon you. And that leads to a lot of problems later on down the line, because trust is such a basic building block of any relationship. And how we communicate that by the deeds we do and the words we say become very important.
Absolutely. And it's no clearer is this example scene than in the case of employers, where people say, sure, I'll do that, and they don't ever do it, or they don't get to doing it, and then it ultimately costs them a job. You know, it can have pretty grave consequences. It can cause a person to separate from something that they really enjoy pretty quickly. Thanks,
absolutely.
That's terrific. I have a question. I have another question here that we've just got. It says, the caller must be listening to what we're saying, and they're sending us questions via on the internet. It says, well, then what strategies or things can I do to keep my promises? So it sounds like this is the ADHD partner is saying, you know, what can I do to keep my promises? Well, my first reaction right there is pretty clear. It's pick your promises carefully. Really think about something if you promise to do it. You know, Nordstrom has a great sign in their customer service department, or at least they used to, that said under promise and over deliver. And I think that's a great motto for anyone with ADHD, or anyone for that matter, the idea that you under promise what you're going to do and you over deliver what you actually do. It's a great way to actually exceed people's expectations when you want to keep your promise. The second point I think that really people need to understand is that very often a person with ADHD has two voices. We can speak from the heart, which is, I will do that totally. You have my undivided commitment. I've never felt stronger about anything in my life. And then 1 minute later or 5 minutes later or half an hour later, it doesn't get done. And that's more speaking from the heart, meaning in the moment, the person with ADHD felt like they could do it. They wanted to do it. But they didn't stop long enough to think, how can I do it? And that's the difference. When you speak from an emotional promise, you may be over-promising things that you haven't even thought about how you can deliver. But if you can stop for a second and say, okay, stop before I promise, how will I make that happen? And then if you can do those things, then you would be able to promise from the mind, which is a much stronger and sturdier place. So it's the difference between what a person with ADHD wants to do or a wish they have versus what they're able to do. So just for anyone out there who's having a problem keeping their promises, just remember that it's more painful if you don't fulfill a promise that you promised to keep, and it's more rewarding if you actually follow through on something, even if it's only a much smaller version of the original promise.
Absolutely.
So I think that's something. And now, Sarah, you have some strong thoughts about this. As far as I know, certainly you talk a lot about how not only is it important that we pick our promises carefully and just say no and that sort of thing, and not to trust your memory to remember your promises, write them down. That's good ADHD coach advice. But I love when you tell about the fact that I'm sorry is really overused in a relationship. I know it's something that I've learned a lot from you about that. Because you'll say things like, I'm sorry is not helping me.
I'm sorry is almost a useless statement, because when you've done it so many times, it loses its meaning. Because if you were really sorry in doing something, you would attempt not to do it, or people would see that you were certainly trying, or you put in other structures in place. So your actions really speak very, very loudly, louder than your words sometimes. and it becomes important then to show by what you do that you need it and you care. As someone with ADD, you're not going to want someone to do that to you. So creating, and ADD is not an excuse. It's important to create reminders, structures, ask for help if you need it. And with so many electronic devices out there now, there's every possible way to make sure that you can do what you say that you're going to do, which goes back to under-promise, under-over-deliver.
And I think you're also bringing up another point, which is when you go to make a promise, or how does a person keep their promises, rather than say, I'm sorry, look at what you can do about it. Look at what you can do to fix the situation next time, or how could you do it differently. You know, it's really helpful if you have not delivered on something that you've promised on. Rather than just say, I'm sorry, or the dreaded, I'm sorry, I have ADHD, which can feel like a useless set of words to a lot of people, is to stop and say to the person, hey, look, I messed up, I didn't do well there, and I'm really sorry for that specific oversight, and let me think about for a minute how I can do that better or remedy what we've got going on right now. So it's really about trying to have a plan or have a action that you take rather than just say, I'm sorry, if you want to keep your promises.
So think about when that happens, the first place everybody wants to go to is kind of shame and embarrassment. But we're really going to ask you to take a moment, step back in your mind, and instead come back with positive solution. How can I turn this into something positive? How can I make this better next time? Really take that moment to see where did it fall apart and what steps had they been changed? And what turning points could it have been done differently the next time?
So if you're looking
at...
No, go ahead.
No mission that anyone ever goes on that they don't come back and they debrief. So ADD is frequently, okay, don't talk to me, don't tell me about it, I don't want to hear anymore. And the person who was sort of neglected in this and who didn't get what was promised or told to is feeling, oh, here it is again, we're living it. But these are the times that you really have to take to, let's figure out what happened so next time it doesn't have to happen again.
Because, right, exactly. And I was going to say there's fewer things more comforting than if you think of a friendship where you forgot to do something that you promised. If instead of just saying, I'm sorry, or, oh, it's my ADD, if you said, you know what, let's take a minute and I'd like to look at what happened again and see if there's not some ways I, meaning the person who's not kept their promise, I might be able to redo this again or replay this in a different way. Because it's really fulfilling to think, rather than just say, I'm sorry, which can sound like it's no big deal, it's really a fulfilling experience if a friend says to you, you know what, I'm going to program your appointments in my Google Calendar, and I'm going to put three warnings in so they warn me three times before I get here. And you know what, I'm going to text you when I'm on my way, so that way you don't wait and worry that I'm not going to make it. That sends the message to the person that they're important, that their promise meant something, because you're taking an action to remember next time.
Dr. Furman usually says sometimes the best medicine for ADHD is just getting stuff done.
Right. And for those of you who couldn't understand some of those words because of her little stuffy nose, she said,
sorry.
Dr. Furman says sometimes the best medicine, so it's not medication, he says, sometimes the best medicine for ADHD is just getting stuff done. Bravo.
Thank you for clarifying.
Well, you know, it's one of my favorite phrases I hear Dr. Furman say. And I thought, when you have a little stuffy nose, it's a little hard to understand. So now there's a question. Sarah, you've got the next question.
You know, this, you're going to hear that this one is really good, okay, because it pops out all the time. How can I stop saying things that I don't mean in the heat of the moment?
Yeah,
so,
sure, no one can relate to that.
And when you start to address this, I want you to sort of think about when we do answer that quick response, are we doing it constructively or deconstructively? Or destructively, sorry.
Right, constructively or destructively, exactly.
Thank you.
And the idea here is, you know, there's ways that we can say things at any given moment. And a lot of times it's bigger than just being impulsive, you know, and saying the first thing that came to your mind. Because there's really a couple of ways that you can use that are beyond just reducing inhibition, which can be a little bit difficult to control. The idea is, are you speaking from a place where you're speaking angry or angrily, or are you speaking meanly? Sarah talked about it when she said constructive or destructive. The idea is helpful versus hurtful. So if I say to someone, you know, I'm really angry right now. In fact, I'm really angry with you, and I'm angry with you for these reasons, and I don't see myself being not angry for another couple of hours. That's really actually constructive and helpful because you're informing the other person about how you feel inside of you at that moment. That's actually informing another person is actually very helpful, very constructive, like Sarah was saying. Now, very often what happens is in either the ADHD partner or the non-ADHD partner, we seem to think that our friends, our colleagues, our coworkers, our children, our partners aren't understanding what we're saying, and worse, we don't think they feel as badly as we feel. So therefore, we want to strike out with what we say in the heat of the moment and hit them on the head with it in sort of a very meanly or a very mean fashion. And it's also very destructive what we're doing and very hurtful when we say, you know, you're a terrible listener. You're an awful person. You're a terrible dad. Any of those phrases aren't designed to inform the other person about where you're coming from. They're designed to tear down the other person so they feel injured or they feel pain. So kind of the way I think about it is one of the ways to stop saying things that you don't mean is to, in the heat of the moment, is to really understand what was your intention. You know, angry is how you feel, and mean is what you do to make the other person feel badly. And one of the things that I learned a lot from Sarah is, look, it's okay to feel angry. It's not okay to be mean to someone. That's really where the line is drawn. Because mean is about injuring the other person, an attempt to tear them down, to get them to feel the way you feel. And really the healthier version of that is that emotions are a natural part of a relationship. But really angry is okay. But mean can be a real relationship breaker. What do you think about that, Sarah?
I think it was great. I just want to add a couple things for the people can do and think about. It's helpful to create a list of say these statements or say this statements. So when you get stuck in the heat of the moment or when things are happening, you already have it written down and thought about.
That's really great, Sarah. I mean, you're talking about at a time when you know you're not hot-headed, maybe you're feeling relaxed, to really prepare or have four or five statements you could say that could come out pre-rehearsed that would be helpful and not hurtful.
Right. So part of this is so that you're focusing on the solution, not just on the problem. Because if you don't focus on the solution, you never get to the solution.
Amen to that.
We want to try to be as clear as possible. And statements might look something like this. If I can get my voice together. Okay, here it goes. this is not working for me right now. This really makes things difficult. So let's figure out a better way to do this. Notice we didn't talk about it being about the person.
So you didn't say you're a total loser.
That's about the situation.
Right. This always happens. How come you didn't get it right? Those kind of phrases. Those are what not to do.
And no matter how much in your heart of hearts you really want to go there because you've been hurt, it never helps.
And it might feel good in the moment to go there. You think in your mind. But it would really have a long-term payoff that's pretty destructive.
It's always destructive. It takes time, patience, and practice, but it will create a different relationship. Both parties, however, have to be in agreement that that's what's going on. So both partners agree to what's going to happen and how that's going to look and how that's going to work.
Okay, that's great. So again, the message here is, think about before you get there what some phrases are that you might use, that you want to ways that you want to express yourself, inform the other person, don't injure the other person, and to focus on the solution and leave room for the solution so that you actually get to a solution and you just don't end up having an emotional meltdown. That's great.
You're going to love the next question.
And how's your voice, Sarah?
It gets stuck sometimes, but otherwise I'm pretty good.
Wow.
Thank
you. You're a trooper. I really appreciate it. it says here that a popular question was, why does my ADHD partner, this happens all the time in our world.
You're going to like this question.
I should have written this question. It says, why does my ADHD partner often say things that don't make any sense? For those of you who don't know what that sounds like, we have a phrase in our center that we use, because people with ADHD, very often, it's like our brains are going 100 miles an hour, but our mouths are only going 50 miles an hour. So we say things that seem like they make no sense at all. And the person listening to it, it's really easy to want to say, you know, what did you just say? Oh, my gosh, that makes no sense. What are you talking about? Because in the urgency of the ADHD partner to get things out, it can seem like, you know, they're pulling things out of the air. And it really can create some stress in the relationship. Sarah, why don't you share with them a little bit about how we handle when we talk about giraffes who wear purple coats? That's, for those of you who don't know, I'll tell the story really quickly. I tell the story.
You tell the story because it's longer than my throat can handle.
The story goes that I was recounting to Sarah one time a story about my going to Mexico, and I was trying to explain to her that there are polar bears at this place that we went in Mexico. And my partner kept looking at me like, what are you saying to her? He didn't say a word, and I kept going on and on and on, insisting about these polar bears in Mexico. Finally, my partner pipes in and says, you know there are no polar bears in Mexico, right? I went, there totally are. At which point Sarah was like, really, in Mexico? And at which point I said, oh, I meant the iguanas at the water park in Mexico. So what happened very often is, in my quick desire to get this thought in before I forgot it, I grabbed the file that was a little bit mislabeled. Instead of grabbing iguanas that live in water parks, I grabbed any endangered animal that lives in Mexico and sort of put them together. And it would have been very easy for both Sarah and my partner to have made me feel very wrong and very stupid at the time. But instead, they just kind of questioned and said, okay, keep going. And then I figured it out on my own. So that's now when that happens, we have a shorthand to say that if I'm starting to say things that don't make sense, she'll say to me, are these giraffes wearing coats again? Is that what we're talking about? And that means to check myself and see if I've got my facts straight, because it happens all the time for people with ADHD.
Just going to add here that frequently when somebody with ADHD isn't really sleeping well, isn't eating appropriately, or is dehydrated, their speech patterns are not going to be necessarily appropriate, and they will sometimes use words that don't I mean, the words themselves are okay, but they don't make sense in
the meaning and the context is not correct.
Correct, you know, based on the question that you've asked. So a coat for us is giraffes in purple coats, which is code that you just said something that makes absolute no sense. And it takes away any embarrassment. It takes away anything, because it could be something simple like dehydration, having skipped a meal, having not slept well, or a combination of the three.
It's so very true. I often joke that in one night's sleep, I can go from a great or reasonably great thinking human being and be reduced to a complete fool who can barely speak my own language just because I get all the words wrong. It's so true. And that if you're feeling tired or you're not drinking enough water and then you're not eating as you should, all those things are going to contribute to how well you can think. Again, it's something we address when we talk about nutrition and ADHD.
I want to add just one little piece here. For the non-ADHD partner listening to the ADDer, and sometimes even for the person with ADD, when you're having a conversation, you're not sure where to go, ask. Simply ask, is this something you want me to talk about or you want me to listen to? Rather than simply act or guess or assume that you know what each other is saying.
Right, because very often what we see is we'll see people communicating and the ADHD partner is sort of talking out loud, not really looking for a response, and the non-ADHD partner or person is jumping on everything the person says and starting to take action, at which point the ADD person often just says, no, I was just thinking out loud. And it makes the non-ADHD person feel a little bit hijacked. I think that's kind of what you're saying.
It's very,
right?
Yeah, so much so. It's so easy to get critical on both sides, to feel criticized, that in and of itself becomes a problem. And then there's no way of understanding what's going on. So it's important to be able to share that you might be feeling criticized so you can get past that as a person and just get to the solution of where you need to be and what you need to do, where you're going with that.
And I think if I can add my final piece to that is the idea that when emotion goes up, and it's easy to do in a relationship where sometimes things don't always make sense, logic goes out the window. And it really shuts down the communication process. All right. Anything else that you want to add, Sarah?
No, I think based on time, we need to continue.
Okay, great. Why don't you tell us what our next question is?
Oh, next question is, why do I always feel like I have to be a superhero or the person that's always handling everything, fixing everything, and managing everything?
So I think maybe the way that we're saying it here is, why do I, as the person without ADHD, always have to be the superhero, doing, changing, adapting? That's what they're really saying, I think, in that question. Right, Sarah?
Yes, absolutely.
So really what we're looking here is very often the non-ADHD partner, they have to do the remembering. They have to do the reminding. They're not allowed to be too emotional. They have to approach the ADHD partner in the right way. They have to not criticize them when they're talking about giraffes wearing purple coats. I mean, there's so much that we ask of the non-ADHD partner that you're right. It very often can feel like the ADHD partner does very little and that the non-ADHD partner is holding the balance of their relationship. And it can feel like the ADHD person, you know, they don't have to remember. They can forget things. They can get things wrong. It's okay. Where the non-ADHD person finds themselves always stepping up, always doing the right thing, always initiating change, always doing the follow-through. And really, it can feel like, in reality, the non-ADHD partner is having to deal with a lot of ADHD issues. And that is not always pleasant. Sometimes ADHD can make us moody. It can make us not nice. And really, I think it does feel like a superhero. Very often it's what we hear from the non-ADHD partner, that they do feel like they have to hold their other partner up and ultimately hold the entire relationship up. And I think that gets really, really tough. I think it gets really old in a relationship.
It does. It's difficult to remember that when you got together with your partner, there was a lot of fun. It was maybe exciting. There was a lot of good things that really attracted you,
like spontaneity,
when you all started out.
Right, go with the flow, that kind of thing, right?
Absolutely.
ADHD people can be fun to date. But the
they're
money you
fun,
share with them, what
happens? Yes.
And so, like, I think what we're talking about here is remembering, why did you pick this person? What does the ADHD partner actually bring to the relationship? Because, frankly, the ADHD partner doesn't get to get off the hook easily or without any responsibility. That's just not fair. And it's very hard in a relationship where one partner, especially the non-ADHD partner, wants some sense of order, some degree of decreased chaos, some degree of predictability. We talked about that earlier. Reliability. They don't want to feel betrayed all the time. And still we ask them to feel, you know, not too angry and say everything the right way. Well,
again, I think we're back here to the importance of agreements,
mm-hmm,
in the relationship, because the ADHD partner doesn't always understand how much or when to contribute. They're likely to say that I feel like I'm doing it right, so what's your problem?
Or I'm doing it right today. Is there a problem with how I'm doing it today? I'm doing it right now.
Right.
And the non-ADHD partner is having an entirely different experience. They're thinking, it's good that you did it today, but you've never done it any other day, or maybe one out of the 100 days I need it. Isn't that what we're saying, Sarah?
That's what we're saying.
I know that laugh. That's the I've been there before giggle.
Or the ADHD partner might say, okay, just pick what you want me to do or work on. I'll do it.
Hey, that's okay. Offsides. That happened in my house the other day. My partner said to me, I feel like I'm doing everything again. That's our code word for it's getting a little lopsided. And I, in all my therapeutic brilliance, said, okay, great, just tell me what you want me to do. To which point I got the response, do I always have to tell you what to do? Because then it's like doing it to me. That doesn't work so good for me. At which point I got up, went outside, picked up the garden hose, and started watering, because I know that's something I could do. Because otherwise it feels really out of balance. But I'll tell you, not everyone has a partner that's as understanding as mine. And if you find yourself in a situation where one of you feels overly burdened, overly pulled upon, this is really not always so easy to try to referee yourself. And that you really might find it helpful if you have a coach or an ADHD therapist that does a lot of work with ADHD folks, you may want to pick up two or three sessions just to kind of maneuver through this. Because very often the biggest reason we find in our center for divorce is that the ADHD partner frankly just doesn't understand how much the other partner is contributing. And it can leave them so they don't do enough, and the other partner feels overburdened, like they're not getting a fair shake in the deal.
So when you work on this, you want to work on what are the strengths. So everybody has strengths. The ADHD partner has strengths, so that they can figure out really what they can do, what they can stick to,
it's
in really order to...
What's your contribution? What could your contribution be?
Absolutely.
So, you know, maybe trying to remember to do something once a week isn't your best thing, because maybe you'll forget on that day. But maybe if you know that your job is to never have dishes in the sink before you go to bed, and you can look in the sink and see the dishes and think, that's my part, and do that every night, not just every now and again. Or if you see that I have another couple where the husband knows if there's dishes that are clean in the dishwasher, no one is supposed to put them away but him. So if he sees the dishes, even if he hates it, including the silverware, he puts everything away. And it's little things like that that can really make a partner feel like, or another person even, feel like they're not shouldering 100% of the burden. It's a great feeling
really,
to think that they thought about it.
Thank you. What we're really saying here is that you want to create the conversation and the agreements so that neither party have to feel criticized, but you know what's supposed to happen, how it's supposed to be, working based on each of your strengths, so that it's more likely to do. Not everything is going to be likable, but certainly, so many times we've seen people doing the wrong task. Like, I hate washing, I love folding, but he folds, I wash. Like, wait a minute, why are you doing things that you don't like when you can be doing things you do like?
And if you like doing them, you're likely to do them.
Correct. You know, looking at the time, we better move on.
All right, I've got another.
Because we have a little more.
Okay, great. I've got another incoming question that says, what do I do when I'm trying to talk to my ADHD partner, but he, this sounds like it must be a woman speaking, seems to have an issue listening and keeps saying, enough already. Ooh. Okay, so it's the enough already, I got it, don't bug me so much. I think these are all versions of the same thing.
Oh, so important to, when this happens, to really focus on the present, to not get mean and retaliatory, and because I'm sure that the non-ADD person begins to feel ambushed at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So
what we're saying here is, very often when the ADHD partner says, enough already, or I got it, I get it, it usually means they're being asked to relive or revisit something in the past. And while that can be important, not in the heat of the moment, for a person with ADHD, I have to tell you, few things are more irritating and less constructive than talking about things in the past that I did a year ago that I can't fix now. So really what's helpful is, when the other person's saying enough already, it's to not get caught up in the emotion of it, be short and clear, and just say something like, hey, when you forgot Johnny at school today, it freaked me out. Just throw it right in there, short and clear and direct. And often
that the goal is to be informative here, to be heard so that change can occur.
Right. And very often, because people with ADHD, we don't seem to be listening, people want to repeat things and repeat things and repeat things to us, which just makes us more irritable, versus if they just tell us what's the problem, what do we have to fix, we can stay tuned in easier. We tend not to tune people out, helps us stay in the present, especially if they talk about what happened right today, so it's right in front of us.
So we want to create solutions to situations and problems that are happening now and stay focused on that.
Right, so like Sarah was saying earlier, it's really easy to focus on the emotion of the problem and never focus on the solution. And that's the time to really talk about, if the person's saying enough already, then you say, how will we pick up Johnny tomorrow when you forgot today? Just simply ask. And then see if the ADHD person, who knows probably that they made a mistake and is feeling embarrassed and easily criticized, but that doesn't mean they don't get to come up with a solution. And so if the person with ADHD is also feeling like there's no hope here, if you say, you know, you never remember to pick up Johnny at grade school, well, that's an emotional response. That's hurtful. It's not leaving room for the solution. Versus if you say, you know what, it means a lot to Johnny that he doesn't get left at grammar school in the morning. How will we fix this tomorrow? It's short, to the point, and it gives motivation. So something that we talk a lot about here, too, is if you can use fewer words in a sentence, 5 words or less, you usually won't be met with as much resistance. So that could sound like, hey, Johnny was left. Stop. What are we going to do about Johnny tomorrow? Simple statements. Because when you talk in these long run-on sentences, you know, even FBI interviewers know not to use 2-part questions because no one remembers the second part. So those are some suggestions that we've seen couples use in our center that help diffuse those automatic answers.
We want to keep it simple. Ask to have maybe a period of time, like 5 or 10 minutes, so that they can listen to you, so you can discuss it, work on the strategy. Sometimes you'll get a solution. It's working 80%, 20% doesn't work. Rather than throw the whole thing out, just try to revise the small pieces that didn't work. As you know, you learn a lot from what doesn't work, not just from what works. And you just revise those pieces, getting closer and closer, so that you have your solutions for what you need when you need them.
Right. So really don't reinvent everything at every turn. See if there's revisions that you can make that are really helpful. I really want to get to this next question because I, myself, it's something that I feel when I'm certainly
Before you do that,
yep.
I need to tell you that you only have 5 minutes to the end of the call.
Okay. So I have
so I'm gonna
1 minute.
I'm going to let you do this one totally so that you can, so we can be courteous to our
And for
our,
those of you who didn't
listeners.
Pick it up, this was an in vivo how to deal with an ADHDer without criticism. That was awesome, Sarah. Okay, so I'm gonna go with the next question, which is, what do I do when my partner is always interrupting me? We get this all the time. In fact, we do a communication suicide workshop for couples, and this is one of the things we see all the time, which is interrupting. If you understand what interrupting is, it really chips away at the self-esteem and the value of your partner or the person that you're speaking with. Interrupting, if you think about the last time you were interrupted, it really sends the message that the person doing the interrupting, that what they have to say is more important than what you have to say. And ultimately, I'm more important than you are, which means you're not very important. That it can be very destructive. For those of you who have ADHD, it's really good to remember that just because there's a pause in the conversation, that does not mean run in and fill the space with your thoughts and ideas, because it's really destructive to the relationship if every time your partner takes a breath, you stick in 3 more sentences, because that's not what they're saying. They're maybe trying to be thoughtful and reflective. And sometimes I hear ADHD partners tell me, yeah, but if I don't say it right then, I'm going to forget it. Then you know what? Carry a notepad. Dr. Furman does it. I do it. It works really well. Just a couple quick solutions for our listeners. For the person who is tempted to do the interrupting, really think about being a listener and not a responder. Because for those of us with ADHD, we often want to give our input on everything. And sometimes it's
a clock of 4:30.
So it's really good to ask yourself sometimes, if I didn't say that one phrase, if I didn't insert that thought right here, right there, would it really mean life or death for the other person? And it probably wouldn't. Probably would put a little space in the conversation. Finally, if you have to interrupt, be really sensitive not to start a monologue. Because with people with ADHD, it's really easy for us to think we're joining with another person when we tell them how that experience that we just interrupted was like ours, or I can relate. And really what happens is it just steals the focus away from the person. Again, telling the person you're talking to that they're not important. Finally, there is debate feelings, not facts, because if you get in a fact war with both, you're probably never going to win. But if you get an argument about how you feel and you debate back and forth, it didn't say argue, but you discuss and understand how you felt in the moment, it's really helpful, because focusing on the feelings sometimes is the most important. And last, always ask yourself, do you want to be right or be happy? And I think that one speaks for itself. I think I did that in 3 minutes, right? Okay, so that's my speed talking about interrupting. Sarah, do we have any time for any more questions? Where are we at on time? All right. I'm getting the motion that we only have about 1 minute left. So, again, I guess I'll close here and say that we really are grateful to all of our listeners and to everyone that has been involved on the call this evening. It's always a privilege to be able to reach out and serve members of our community and their partners, parents, people that love them, and all of you that have been so gracious to send us your questions. We do these calls once a month, and you can find out that information on our website, which is www.ADHDspecialists.com, and there you'll find on our website all the information about upcoming events that we do. It is usually the last Wednesday of every month. Right, the last Wednesday of every month.
Wednesday
from 6 to 7. And finally, again, let me remind you that Chad in San Fernando Valley is offering Ask the Experts training coming up, and you can call or speak with Dr. Billy at 818-919-1971. And Parent to Parent is also coming up, which is an amazing parenting opportunity to learn all about parents' education, how to get away with your kids, how not to live in a war zone. And again, if you'd like to have information about that, go to our website, or you can email Dr. Billy at drbilly, B-I-L-L-I, at attentionb.com. Well, Sarah, thank you again for taking part in the
call.
Thank
you.
It's always fun when we get to talk to our listeners.
We love it.
We love it. So thanks again to everyone. We look forward to your questions.